WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mariah Wolfel, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. On today's show, we discussed the current state of the HIV/AIDS fight in Chicago and why we see a funding gap between Black-led and other organizations. I was joined by Timothy Jackson, Director of Policy and Advocacy for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, and Hannah Peewee, Associate Director of Communications for Task Force Prevention and Community Services, a grassroots healthcare organization on Chicago's West Side. We started things off with an overview of the current state of HIV/AIDS in Chicago. 22,000 Chicagoans are living with HIV. 55% of them are Black, despite just making up a third of the population. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we know that 22,000 is way too many. And understanding that in the current state of HIV and AIDS, that is completely preventable. But what we tend to run into is a number of barriers, including access to care, lack of insurance, stigma, discrimination, obviously homophobia, transphobia, medical mistrust, and a host of other barriers that provide for these barriers that we see experienced by Black and Latinx communities, predominantly here in Chicago. And so that is the reason why it's so important that, you know, even when we talk about PrEP uptake, PrEP is highly effective in preventing HIV, but when you look at the numbers, Black communities just aren't taking, you know, this opportunity, and you have to ask yourself why. And so some of those issues that I mentioned, whether it's lack of access to care, whether it's lack of insurance, and a host of other issues are the reasons why. And those are really the barriers that stop us from ending the HIV epidemic here in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, you call it a preventable disease, and I want to talk about that a little bit more. Hannah, how do these existing inequities, some of them that have just been named, contribute to this disproportionate number of cases? And do you see that in your work on the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. When people are just struggling to make it day to day, they don't know where they're going to get their next meal from, they're experiencing homelessness, they don't even have the capacity to, you know, get on PrEP. They don't have the health care. They don't have a doctor to speak to. And so these disparities that we see directly affect our community and prevent people from receiving care. What's really alarming is that HIV is not a death sentence anymore. It is something that you can not only live with, but thrive with. But when we're experiencing these barriers to care, it makes it far more deadly than it needs to be. And it's directly affecting our communities every day.
Can you, Hannah, talk about, you know, the work that you're doing with Task Force Chicago and with folks in Austin and elsewhere on the West Side?
Yeah, absolutely. So for those who don't know, Task Force is a multi-service grassroots organization, and we're committed to improving the sexual health of LGBTQ youth in Chicago by providing a safe space for fellowship, HIV, and STI screening and education, as well as on-site referrals to medical, housing, and other social services. And so we work on the ground really closely with people to kind of dismantle those barriers to healthcare. So we're giving people free HIV tests. We're helping them get signed up for PrEP. We have Ryan White, case managers. And so we're trying to do as much as we can to make accessing care a lot easier, and also having that care come from people that are reflective of the community that we're serving.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk about how testing plays a role in preventing HIV and AIDS, especially among the most affected populations?
Yeah, I think in general, there's, as Timothy spoke to a bit earlier, there's a lot of stigma around testing and just HIV in general. And so I think testing is something that really needs to be normalized. It's not something that's really talked about in Black communities a lot of the time. A lot of people have like talked about how they don't even want to get tested because they don't want people to think they even have HIV, because that could be something that they could feel, again, judged for, stigmatized for. And so I think part of what a lot of the Black-led organizations in this city are doing, which is really inspiring, is just having these conversations, going out into the community, talking about what people's options are, and just, again, when people don't have access to healthcare, kind of bringing some of that to the community and letting them know what their options are.
For either of you, you know, what's your response when you're talking to someone who says, I don't even want to get tested because of the stigma around this? Like, what do you say to people who feel that way? Timothy, you can
say. Yeah, I will say, as a person living with HIV for nearly 16 years, I generally tell everyone that every one of us, everyone has an HIV status, whether positive or negative. Mm-hmm. And it is important that whether you're negative, that we can get you on prevention medication like PrEP,
mm-hmm.
So you can stay negative. Or if you're positive, we can get you into care, so you can reach an undetectable viral load. And we understand the science behind that, that U equals U, undetectable equals untransmittable, which means that if you are a person living with HIV with an undetectable viral load, you pose zero risk of transmitting the virus sexually.
Mm-hmm.
So back to my larger point earlier, when I say that this virus is completely preventable, that's what we're talking about. And so that is the reason why testing is so, so vital. In every, you know, corner of the city, every corner of the state, that we make sure that we get people tested into care or into prevention.
And for those who don't know, can you talk about what PrEP is, how it works, and what access looks like to it for people on the South and West Sides in Chicago?
Sure. PrEP is initially in 2012 was a once a day medication that you would take, and you would also couple that with making sure that you would have regular lab visits and doctor's visits to make sure that you are staying negative and mm-hmm. you're taking that every day, and it's up to 99% effective. Over the last few years, we've added an additional modality where it allows you to do it through injection every other month. And that has been, both of those are widely effective. The problem there that becomes is when we look at PrEP uptake. And unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, PrEP uptake among Black and other communities of color just isn't where we want it to be and where it needs to be. And so there's still work there to be done. And making sure that, you know, right now PrEP is supposed to be covered by insurers and Medicaid without cost sharing, meaning you're not supposed to pay anything for it. But we're still hearing stories where that's not happening, where people are having to pay. And that shouldn't be. And so that's the reason why I say there's work still left to be done to make sure that we can get PrEP in the hands of the communities that most need it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the HIV/AIDS was declared an epidemic in the 1980s. We've talked a little bit about the stigma. Do you feel that patients today feel overlooked by, you know, the government and the social safety nets that are meant to care for our communities?
I would say yes. I think it still is an epidemic. It's just a silent epidemic now. Mm-hmm. I think there's a common misconception that the HIV/AIDS epidemic like rose and died like in the 80s and 90s, but that's just not the case. We're still seeing cases, and the disparity is only growing. As we already talked about, Black people are disproportionately affected. And so I feel like with these communities that often get overlooked in many aspects, not just regarding HIV, but in all policy and social needs, it's not a surprise that we're also getting overlooked in a medical epidemic such as HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, and I would say, Hannah, I think you're spot on with that. On the policy side, I would say there's a stigma that comes to working on policy related to HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
As former lobbyist, state government lobbyist for AIDS Foundation Chicago, can I tell you the number of looks that I've received when I tell people I'm working for AIDS Foundation Chicago down in Springfield? And so that's just being honest and understanding that people have this perception of people living with HIV. And that makes it, you know, even more difficult to continue to do this work, especially when communities that look like me are continuing to be impacted.
Let's shift gears to talking about the funding gap that exists between Black-led community organizations and larger organizations like the AIDS Foundation. Now, the Chicago Department of Public Health actually testified about this issue at a recent city council hearing. Health Commissioner Dr. Simbo Ige talked about how the department is trying to make the grant application process more equitable by giving extra points for certain new criteria. Let's take a listen.
We want people to demonstrate that they are using trauma prevention and trauma-informed services. We have included a requirement for cultural responsiveness, ensuring that services are culturally and linguistically appropriate. They have to be able to make these services available in the language of the community. We have to request that the applicants demonstrate health equity in all communities. So these are some of the ways that we are continuing to improve the system as a response to some of the calls from our community members to do better.
Hannah, talk about some of the challenges that small community-led organizations that serve Black residents face when applying for city grants.
Absolutely. So I will say it is a city issue, but it's also a national issue. Mm-hmm. So all across the board, reports for Black-led nonprofits show that we are underfunded. In Chicago specifically, we often operate with micro-scale budgets. So two-thirds of Chicago Black-led nonprofits have annual budgets under $100,000, and only 2% of them exceed $10 million. And by contrast, the majority of white-led nonprofits are less likely to be that small. And so we are often the ones located in the communities doing the work, interfacing with the public. At Task Force, we also make a commitment to hire from the community. So a lot of our staff members are people that are participants and the people we serve know personally. And yet, again, we're having this funding disparity, even though we are often the ones on the front lines working really closely with the people that need the most help.
Yeah. According to research from the Black Leadership Advocacy Coalition for Healthcare Equity in Illinois, which I know Task Force is a part of, the Chicago Department of Health allocated $1.8 million of its $40 million budget from 2019 to 2024 to African-American or Black-led organizations. So that accounts for about 4.46 of its total funding. Obviously, as we heard from Dr. Ige, this is an issue the department is aware of. Timothy, can you talk a little bit about what the AIDS Foundation's work, how that differs from smaller community-led organizations?
Yeah, I think what the smaller organizations, as Hannah mentioned, is something that is important to AFC is also being community-centered. I think that is the reason why small organizations tend to do exceptionally well is because understanding when you're talking about something like HIV, there is a trust that must be there. And the only way that you're going to be successful is if the people that are coming to you for services can trust you. And so when you're talking about equity and making sure that that you're meaningfully addressing the epidemic here in Chicago, you're not going to be able to end the HIV epidemic without addressing equity. Equity among the people who are impacted, but also making sure that these Black-led organizations receive the funds that they need. Again, because community trusts them. One of the things that is most important to us are making sure that we get care to the people and the communities that need it the most. And without question, those Black communities that comprise most of new diagnoses here in Chicago and Illinois are those communities that need it the most. And so, you know, that just makes good sense. It's good policy. And with AFC, one of the things that we have done with our racial equity plan is increase our amount of our budget that we provide to our subgrantees, to where we are now at 28%, which has grown over the last couple of fiscal years, and we're continuing our work to do better.
Because the AIDS Foundation, you know, gets money from the federal government, the state, or the city, and then you also subgrant with smaller organizations to carry out prevention and treatment work.
Absolutely.
Hannah, can you talk just a little bit about, you know, what you've seen from CDPH in terms of addressing this issue from the health department's perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. So task force, we currently receive funding from CDPH to support trans individuals. And while that grant was originally intended to be for a 12-month period, we've only been able to be awarded it on a quarterly basis due to the concerns with the federal government not paying. And so this irregular funding schedule, it creates instability, it threatens our sustainability, and directly impacts, of course, Black communities. And so it just, in general, it makes what could be a vital resource to support trans individual just less stable. And internally, of course, it makes it hard for task force to plan ahead and offer the support we need to if we're constantly worried about pivoting and unstable funding.
Hannah, can you talk about, you know, the big elephant in the room that you just mentioned, that the Chicago Department of Public Health is facing significant cuts in federal funding? The vast majority of the department's budget comes from the CDC. How are your organizations preparing for this? And I want to hear from both of you. Hannah, we'll start with you.
Mm-hmm. So in general, Timothy and I were actually talking about this earlier today, but we've had to become like masters of pivoting, so to speak. We got to stay on our toes and just be ready to take on whatever comes our way. And so we're really at task force relying on our community in these times. We are doing lots of like fundraising events and reach outs to more state funding and foundation funding, things that may not be hopefully as impacted by the federal government, because those are things that in times like these we can fall back on and hopefully have the support of our community with.
And Timothy?
Yeah, I would just add that unfortunately, President Trump and his proposed budget proposed making huge cuts to CDC, to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention when it comes to HIV prevention funding, which obviously hurts the work that we're doing here in Chicago and Illinois and ending the HIV epidemic. One of the things that Hannah mentioned is pivoting. But also part of one of the things that we've been doing is on our federal and state advocacy is really trying to get the word out to both our members of the congressional delegation, but our state and local leaders, letting them know that any cuts to the CDC HIV prevention dollars that come to this state are going to mean new diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, and I just have some numbers here I want to share, that if there is a 50% reduction in CDC prevention funding, you're going to look at 3,013 new HIV diagnoses in Illinois by 2030. With 100% reduction in CDC funding, that balloons to over 5,700. Here in Chicago, with 50% reduction in CDC prevention, that would be over 1,200 new cases in addition to what's already currently happening. And if you balloon that to 100%, reduction in CDC funding, almost 2,400 new diagnoses. And so it is really a one-to-one kind of cause and effect. We know that the money that goes, that comes from the CDC, that allows us to be able to do all the types of things we do related to prevention, we know that it saves lives. And so taking that money away, we know what the effect is going to be.
You know, the fiscal year 2026 budget by the Trump administration includes these significant cuts, including eliminating a $258 million program that was crucial to finding an HIV vaccine. We've talked about the large proportion of federal funding that goes into the department, the health department's budget. Are you concerned that these cuts will be not only a setback to the overall mission to prevent and treat HIV/AIDS, but to your local goals of increasing this funding? It seems the health department says there has been some progress made. They're trying to make changes, but that everything just might be thrown up in the air with these cuts.
Everything, when you couple the cuts along with the other actions of the administration, namely the executive orders around DEI, mm-hmm. Around gender ideology, quote unquote, around this, even this latest one, that criminalizes people who are unhoused, who have substance use disorder, or who have mental health issues. And so you are literally looking at an administration that is doing an all-out aerial assault on the communities that are already disproportionately impacted by HIV. And so you couple that with the cuts, and that is going to do tremendous harm to the work that we're trying to do to end the HIV epidemic here.
Hannah, how about you? Are you concerned about the local work that, you know, your advocacy group has been a part of that progress being backtracked because of these cuts?
Yeah, absolutely. As Timothy just spoke to, this isn't theory. This is just data. Like, we know it's going to happen. We don't have to, like, guess. People will get sick. And it's really frustrating that under the guise of DEI being an unfair advantage or whatever it is they say, it's just not. Sometimes we need to have a racial lens to look at these issues because, again, racial disparities. When Black people are being disproportionately affected, when poor communities are being disproportionately affected, we need that extra support to address the needs. We've talked about earlier that white people are statistically more on PrEP, even though they experience it less because they have of myriad of issues. And so we really, these funding cuts are really precarious. It makes it very scary because we need the help, and getting that pulled away from you and kind of left to spin out on your own is very scary, both for us as leaders in the community and for the people we serve living day to day.
I want to end, you know, asking beyond the funding, which is obviously crucial to all the work that you do, but what concerns do you have about the message that these cuts to HIV/AIDS funding sends to your communities? And how do you combat that messaging in your day-to-day work? Like, what do you say to people?
Absolutely. I think that starkly, it makes it feel like our lives don't matter, that we're something that is an expense that certain people are willing to make. Like, oh, you know, we can cut the funding. Some people might get sick, but that's, you know, that's just what it is. And it's just not true. Our community obviously matters. And so at Task Force, we really try to combat that by providing that community, letting people come together, seeing, you know, we can support each other through these times. Our experiences do matter. There are people living like you going through the same issues that we do, and we will not be shoved into the back. We will not be silenced. We will come together and get through anything, including times like these.
Yeah, Hannah, you said it beautifully. One of the things that I would just add is that there is value in the lives of the communities that we serve. But this administration and congressional Republicans have been hell-bent on dehumanizing many communities, people living with vulnerable HIV, the broader LGBTQ community, specifically trans and gender expansive folks. And what I would say to them is your lifestyle has purpose, your lifestyle has meaning, and we will do whatever we are able to do to make sure that you are still allowed to live your life authentically and on purpose, and we will continue to center community in that work.
Thank you so much. Reset invited the Chicago Department of Public Health to today's conversation, but they did not have anyone available to send. We've been speaking with Timothy Jackson, Director of Policy and Advocacy for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, and Hannah Peewee, Associate Director of Communications for Task Force Prevention and Community Services on the West Side of Chicago. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset podcast was produced and mixed by Sienna Greaves. It was edited by Dan Tucker. For more conversations like this one, make sure you're subscribed. I'm Mariah Wolfel. We'll meet again tomorrow.